Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever lived in fear? Now, that's a very, very scary thought. Tell me, would you like to learn more about how to fight against fear? Have you ever wanted to know how to get and maintain a positive attitude in life? Can you imagine ignoring a negative comment? I'd have a hard time doing that. Tell me, do you know what you can do to face life on a positive note? Have you ever heard about a book called Fight Fear and Foster Faith? I love that. Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that you're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to fight fear? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire. She will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I am pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.7 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. She is an author, speaker, inspirational humorist, a member of the Christian Comedy Association, and she has released two DVDs, Who Put the Elephant in My Stocking and Been There, Got the Wig. She is formerly a TV news on-air reporter in Los Angeles and college professor of broadcasting arts and speech communication. My guest is an ovarian cancer survivor and founder of the Been There, Got the Wig Breakfast Club and Ministry. She shares her story of challenging her battle with fear using humor, a positive attitude, and faith to inspire others to never give up. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today, Jana Flagg. Hi, Jana. How are you doing?
Hi, January. Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. And it's interesting how our paths cross. Last week, I had a cancellation. One of my guests could not make the show due to a family commitment. And the next thing I knew, I looked on my email, and there your email was.
Oh, great.
So I kind of felt that fate had put us together, and I'm just thrilled to have you on the show. Let's talk a little bit about your success story. Where did it begin? Where were you born, and who was your first mentor?
Well, I was born in Los Angeles, and I was privileged to have a mentor. I went into broadcasting as a broadcast journalist. Now, this was back in the early 70s when it was unusual for women to be in that field, and I actually did have a mentor, and that was Cleet Roberts, who is one of the founding fathers, so to speak, of broadcast journalism. And you might recall him many years ago in a trench coat over in the Philippines, covering MacArthur's return to the Philippines or anywhere around the world there was news. There was Cleet Roberts, and he was an anchor on a local news station, and we met, and he kind of took me under his wing, and I truly had a mentor. I would meet with him every day and basically be his assistant, you know, as he was doing his news programs and so forth. And so, you know, that that was very special to actually have a mentor in my life.
Oh, for sure. And how old were you when you connected with Cleet?
I was 24, 25.
And how long did you work with him?
Well, I worked with him over a period of about a year or so, and I created a project that would get me past the guard gate in the studios in Hollywood, and I think you'd appreciate this, January. What I did was I carried a clipboard and a stopwatch and an apple in the trunk of my car, and I would park down the street, and then I would walk in past the guard gate like I was coming back from lunch. And it got me onto the studio lot, because once you're on the inside of the lot, now I don't know what it's like now with security and so forth.
Sure.
But back then, you know, once you're on the inside of the wall, people just figure that you work on a different stage or you work in a different department. That allowed me to gain access in there. And then once that Cleet and I were working together, then, you know, anywhere he went, I could go. So maybe the management wasn't too happy about it, but I really couldn't do anything about it.
Well, it sounds like a brilliant idea to me. I wish I had thought of it.
Can still use it.
Yeah, I will. I will for sure. Jana, share with us a little bit about your, you are an ovarian cancer survivor and the founder of Been There, Got the Wig, Breakfast Club and Ministry. Tell us a little bit about how old you were when you discovered you had ovarian cancer.
Well, when they opened me up and found it, I was 56, 57, and I'm told that's just right in there, right in the textbook at an average age for that. And like so many women with any type of female cancer, that I was misdiagnosed for over a year. And so when they opened me up, they just expected it to be a routine hysterectomy. The ovarian cancer, which had spread, was a big surprise for everybody.
And what were your symptoms, just like the symptoms you'd have for a hysterectomy situation? Or
well, and I don't know what those are, but the symptoms of ovarian cancer, there's about five or six, and they're very common to just being female. For example, bloating or some pressure or pain in the abdomen area, fatigue, getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and any change in digestive habits, that's often the first sign. So I actually went to the doctor, to the OBGYN, expecting it to be some sort of intestinal blockage. And I kept saying, you know, there's something in there pressing, there's something in there. I don't feel I was heard, because it took three doctors and it took several months, and finally my husband taking me to emergency room doubled over, and once you go to emergency room, then you get results. I got an ultrasound and scan, and they said, hey, you know, your ovary is the size of a basketball and there's something else in there. And I thought, duh, I've been telling people that. But to answer your question more specifically, so many of those symptoms that I mentioned, that the doctors just chalk it up and say, you're a middle-aged woman.
Go home
and take the antidepressants and forget it.
And this is very, very common, this misdiagnosis. I've heard this tale over and over. I lost one of my dearest friends, and she was misdiagnosed for colon cancer.
Ooh.
And when I'm looking at your symptoms, she had bloating, fatigue. She had all the same symptoms that you had. And she was misdiagnosed for over a year and just about what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
So once you discovered you had it, did they do surgery right away?
Well, they discovered it in the surgery.
Oh.
What was supposed to be an hour and a half routine hysterectomy turned out to be 3.5 hours. And I expected, I had never been the patient before, never been in the hospital before, and so I expected to wake up with a little bit of manageable pain and have a little bikini cut. instead, I woke up 2 days later, two full days later, in the middle of the night in the dark, and I, when I finally got a nurse to respond, she, I said, why does it hurt so much? And nothing, you know, nothing eased the pain. She said, well, they had to do more than they expected. So it wasn't until the doctor came in the next day that I learned that it was stage 3C ovarian cancer with a second tumor down in the pelvic cul-de-sac and cells in the omentum. You know, that fatty apron that covers our tummy and our and our intestines?
Right.
That also was taken.
Uh-huh.
And I had over, I was cut from the pelvic bone all the way up between my ribs, and I had over 80 staples.
They pretty much, they pretty much gutted you, girl, didn't they?
Yeah, I was the original Chick-fil-A.
Wow. And after this was over, your husband came, and what did they say to encourage you, or what was the first message you got from your health providers?
Well, the encouragement was that, hey, you know, it was bad news we found cancer, but good news, you are now a cancer survivor. They've changed that moniker. They used to say that you have to live 5 years after diagnosis to be called a survivor. That's been changed. Now they say that from the moment they find cancer till the moment you die, you are a survivor. So I think that was my doctor's way of trying to infuse some encouragement and some hope, you know, before launching into the negative prognosis of cancer, chemotherapy, more surgeries.
Sure. How long were you in the hospital, Jana?
I was in the hospital for a week the first time, and then I went home and spent a month in a rented hospital bed at home.
Uh-huh.
And so my whole life was just trying to walk with a walker about 10 feet to the bathroom and then back to the hospital bed. And then I started 5 months of chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the chemotherapy, I had a second look surgery, again using the same big cut from the pelvic bone up to my ribs. And that time, the second look surgery was done by a cancer surgeon and a gynecological oncologist. And they have just a little bit different way of doing things.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break and hear about your host. And when we come back with Jana Flagg, we're going to talk about what she did after her second cancer surgery. And we're going to talk about her background in battling fear. We'll be right back with Jana Flagg. Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems, people who fearlessly shared their stories, people who have priceless personalities. I've been fortunate to host a talk show called January Jones Sharing Success Stories, and it's been my privilege to interview hundreds of guests. In my new ebook, we're talking about people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, and even polygamy. Then there are my guests dealing with physical struggles such as blindness, cancer, and birth defects. All of my guests have been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. I look forward to sharing them with you in my new ebook, Priceless Personalities: Success Stories Shared by January Jones. The introductory offer of $4.99 is now available at Amazon.com. Order it today. Welcome back with my wonderful guest, Jana Flagg, and I'm just thrilled, Jana, to have you on the show with us. Your book is called Fight Fear and Foster Faith, Gain the Hope and Courage You Need to Overcome Difficult Circumstances. Now, you had a second cancer surgery with a cancer surgeon. Would you recommend that?
Did you say, would I?
Yeah, going to a specialist.
Oh, absolutely going to a specialist. My husband and I learned our lesson. He's a prostate cancer survivor, and then me. And we were both told that even with the surgeries and chemos and other treatment, that it would not cure us, only buy us some time. And okay. I was told I'd have 2 to 3 years, and I'm almost 7 years out.
Seven-year
wow. survivor. So, you know, so absolutely, that's kind of my soapbox, that people go to a cancer specialist because they have the latest, the greatest, the cutting edge. They know what to look for. I want to mm-hmm. say that my previous doctors that missed it, they're good doctors. Mm-hmm. I like them. They're good doctors, and it's not their fault because they didn't know what to look for.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
so I would absolutely recommend that anytime somebody has something more than a few weeks and their own GP or their own doctor isn't getting to it, to go get a second opinion and go to the cancer specialist for whatever area of the body that is hurting. Uh-huh.
And I think it's such good advice to listen to your own instincts, because so many times people know something's wrong. They just can't put their finger on it, but they know they need to get help. Tell us a little bit about your own personal background in battling fear for yourself.
Well, I thought that I had it all together, and I'm a Christian, and I know that God's in control, yada yada. But I tell you, when the doctor said cancer, decades of my faith just chipped away, and I was down for the count. And my greatest battle, January, was not against the cancer, but it was against the fear that overwhelmed me, and it just sucked out any hope, and it threatened to defeat me. It was the fear that was greater than, you know, fighting a physical disease.
Now, what are the things people can do, the three most important things someone can do who is trying to fight fear?
You know, I've suggested these three things based on my own experience, and also in the last 7 years, I met a lot of other cancer patients and cancer survivors. And one thing is to adopt a positive attitude, to program our heart, our spirit, for victory, not defeat, or you'd say success, not failure. And finally, to add humor to our lives. And the good news is that all three of those things are learned behavior.
Okay, right. That is music to my ears, because I am such an advocate of humor in life. I don't know if you realize I'm a member of the Association of Applied Therapeutic Humor, AATH, and that's
right.
Their goal and their mission is to bring humor into the medical area and to bring humor to people who are fighting for their lives.
Right.
Now, what are some things, you know, I love your book. It's just fabulous. Every one of your chapters pretty much brought a smile to my face. just the titles. Like, what did you write about in The Twilight Zone?
Well, when I heard about, when they told me I had cancer, when I heard the cancer word, you know, it was like that C word hung over my head like a cloud. And it was as though I was being ushered into the Twilight Zone, you know, that old TV show of that altered reality. And
right.
I tell you, my brain just absolutely shut off. It was a life-changing moment. It was a surreal moment, like somebody stamped me on my forehead with an expiration date. And according to the doctors, that expiration date could be shorter than the shelf life of a Hostess Twinkie. So if that isn't being in the Twilight Zone, I don't know what is.
Well, that's a very, very relevant and wonderful description. Chapter 5, you write about a postcard from God. Now, did you receive a postcard? What was that?
Well, you know, I talk about how I never asked God why me, but I think that it would have been nice if he'd have sent me a postcard for warning me, you know, that, hey, you know, you're going to have cancer and chemotherapy and surgeries and P.S., don't stock up on hairspray. You know, it would have been nice to know those things. And then also in my imagined postcard from God, you know, he would reassure me. He would say, you know, fear not, for I am with you. Do not dismay, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. And I sure would have liked to have that card, because I think it would have saved a lot of fear, and I think I would have felt a little bit. I know I would have felt more confident going through that process than I did.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a big. Your message is so relevant, because I think a lot of people need to see a light at the end of the tunnel, and when they hear that C word, it's a very depressing, negative. How do you deal with negative people when you find out you have cancer?
Well, you know, just as a part of acquiring and maintaining a positive attitude. You know, by hanging out with positive people, because hope is contagious. But it's even more crucial that we avoid negative people, even if they're related. Now, that can be tricky, but, you know, if they don't live in the same neighborhood, it helps. You don't have to, you know, pick up the phone, and you don't have to see them, because avoiding negative people's comments is really key to fighting fear, because fear is produced when we believe the wrong things. And sometimes, you know, those naysayers, they may not be malicious. It just may be an innocent comment like, people don't survive ovarian cancer. You know, I don't need that little fiery dart going in my brain and rolling around and creating more fear. So my solution was to just cut off anybody that was negative. And just not having any contact. It was important to only take in positive thoughts, you know, positive notes and thoughts and comments from positive people.
Okay, now, what did you do when, how did you ignore a negative comment that you may have heard before or you were hearing for the first time? Just walk away?
Well, the problem with that is you've already heard it. So if you stand there and plug your ears with your fingers and say, la, 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 it's too late. You've already heard it. It's already gone into your brain, and, you know, and it's in there. And you know, you could be thinking about that in the middle of the night. And so it can be a battle, but I really believe that we can win that struggle by not meditating on that negative thought, by not repeating it, because what we repeat, we hear, and we take it in, and it becomes a part of us. And also by, you know, countering that negative message with a positive statement or a positive thought. You know, I like to picture Wonder Woman with her bracelets. And when people are shooting bullets at her, she would raise her wrist and her bracelets would repel the bullets so nothing hurt her. So when someone would say something negative, then I would just, you know, come right back with a positive thing. They'd say, well, people don't survive ovarian cancer. And I'd say, it's the positive people and the feisty ones that make it.
Okay.
And just counter those statements.
Oh, and you have to come back very strong. And that's difficult to do, isn't it? I'm sure hearing you share your story with my listeners is helping a lot of people out there who are struggling with this issue. Now, you write about have bag. Will travel. Tell us what that chapter is about.
Oh, let me grab the book.
What
chapter is that?
Chapter 10.
Nice pictures. You know what I like about this book, January? I am not a reader. So this is designed for people like me who want to pick up a fast read, short sections. I'm visual, and there's 84 pictures in here. So I've got pictures there. Of the bag. So Have Bag, Will Travel talks about the second chemo session. You know, it's such brand new territory. Everything is so scary. Show up in chemo and, you know, and I didn't even know to bring water or a sandwich or anything. And and for ovarian cancer, patients are hooked up for 8 hours. So it's a full day, like a work day.
Wow.
And so the next time I noticed that the other cancer patients had these big bags, like a big beach bag or big tote bag, and they had like a little thermos to bring something to eat that they could stomach, maybe a little juice box and water. There was enough room for them to put a book or knitting or whatever they wanted, their iPad or something in there. And so I put together what I call chemo bags, And I like it color coordinated because it's bright and cheery and happy. And I would bring things like, you know, those Groucho Marx glasses with the eyebrows and the mustache, you know. You know, whatever it took to cheer me up, you know. And took those things, and I took my camera to document the journey as well. So that's what the bags are that you know, after that I came prepared.
Yeah. Well, you know, I spent, I never spent 8 hours with my friend in chemo. Her longest session was 4 hours, but it seemed like it was 400 hours.
Yeah.
And I know getting through it was very tough. And that is such a fantastic suggestion to take a bag with you. And this is for the caretakers. They need to know this information too. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from one of my sponsors, and we're going to be right back with Jana Flagg, and we're going to talk about whether she lost her hair and her chapter, No One Told Me I'd Lose My Eyebrows. We'll be right back with Jana Flagg.
Could your commute or daily exercise routine use a boost? When was the last time you really got the giggles? This is Adele Park, author of Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook, inviting you to tune in, turn on, and let loose a few good laughs. Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook is about a marijuana enthusiast named Blue McKenna who gets involved in a reality TV show as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. A conglomerate of kooky contestants invades the polygamous community of Naval, Utah to compete in a reality show called Yikes. Things get sticky when Blue McKenna's hemp garden is ignited during an ill-fated seance. Find out what's going down in the desert in Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook. Visit www.yikesaudiobook.com to learn more. That's www.yikesaudiobook.com.
You know, both of her books are fantastic. Yikes and Jitters, I highly recommend them. I'm welcoming back Jana Flagg, the author of Fight Fear and Foster Faith, and she is truly another priceless personality on our show. Jana, could you share your website information and tell my listeners how they can get your book?
The website is janaflagg.com, and that's Flagg with an I, F-L-A-I-G, janaflagg.com. And there's contact information there, and they can contact me, or it is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, the UK, India, and the trunk of my car.
Well, that's fantastic. I've never had an author tell us about the trunk of their car. I have a lot of books in my garage, but maybe I'll switch them over to the trunk of my car. That's probably a great suggestion. Now, did you lose your hair?
Oh, I did. And, you know, I think that most women would agree that that's the worst part, January, of going through chemo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't want my hair to fall out in clumps around the house. I wanted to have some kind of control of when and how I'd lose my hair. So I went to my hairdresser, Judy, to help me with that painful transition. And all I told her was take a little bit off the sides, and I wound up with a mohawk. And I loved it. I took some pictures. There are some pictures of that on my website. Uh-huh. And that was just the transition. I eventually, you know, did shave the head and so mm-hmm. forth. You know, but nobody told me that I would also lose my eyebrows and my eyelashes. And I think that's important information. Someone should have told me that.
Absolutely.
Because when it happens, then I was frightened. I thought, uh-oh, something's wrong with chemo. It's not working. Now I'm going to, you know, the chemo's going to take everything.
Yeah.
And I finally, you know how I learned about it? I learned about it from an old lady in chemo. She was a wise old lady sitting across from me in her recliner in the chemo clinic. And she was looking up over newspaper, and other women there were talking. And and she said, "Girls, the most important thing you need to know about chemotherapy." And I thought, "This is it. This is the wise information that I'm going to glean." Yeah. She said, "Never leave home without your eyebrows and eyelashes." And I thought, "That's it? Oh my gosh! You mean I'm going to lose my eyebrows and my eyelashes? I have to learn it from this gal that had painted." So I went out and bought a couple of stencils at a makeup store. It's kind of like when they, you know, when they paint stop on the pavement on the street, mm-hmm. you know, you put the stencil on your forehead and, you know, and then you pencil in that the cutout pattern. But the trick to that is you don't want to mix up the left one or the right one or you create a startled expression.
Okay, that's very, very good practical advice, you know. When
Yeah, it is very practical.
When my friend Jane was going through her colon cancer and she had to go get a wig, and she did that before she actually lost her hair, I went along with her and got into the spirit of the thing, and I ended buying up a couple of wigs that I still have to this day. And
you bought them.
Yeah, every time I take them out, I think of her. And, you know, we had a lot of laughs buying our wigs. It was just one of those kind of girl things that was kind of special.
Well, and it's an opportunity to do something different. I'm a natural brunette, and my husband wanted me to buy a long blonde wig. I think he was kidding, because he said just for around the house, you know. I never did buy that, but we were talking about having some fun, saying, hey, this is my chance. I would never go red or blonde, but you know, this is my chance to reinvent.
And, you know, it's so important to keep that humor and laughter constantly going, because it helps fight fear. I remember spending many nights in the hospital with her, and we were just like the teenagers at a little slumber party, just the two of us. And those are special times that I still treasure to this day. You write about God took me back to bring me forward, and that is a very powerful statement.
You know, he really did. I'm surprised that you asked me that, because it is so powerful that that one day in our church bulletin, I saw a notice that Dave Reaver was coming to town, and you might know he's a Vietnam vet that now has a fabulous worldwide international ministry. Especially to our soldiers in active duty and our wounded soldiers. And he was wounded. He was almost killed, and you know, he was blown up in Vietnam, but he survived. And I saw him years ago as when I was a single gal in my apartment, and I watched Christian television and saw him on the air. At that time, he was in a wheelchair and really looking strange, because he has a reconstructed face and parts of his body.
Sure.
And but I was so touched by him, because he said that when he came up out of that rice paddy, and parts of his face and parts of his body were blown off, and his skin was floating next to him, and the first thing he said was, "God, I still love you." And I thought, I don't think I have that kind of faith that I could go through a terrible time and still say, "God, I still love you." But at that time, I prayed for the same kind of faith. And he did so with such great humor, and humor's always been an important part of my life, and so I had also asked God for a ministry that would have humor and would touch people and heal people. Well, that was 40 years ago, and then I moved just a few years ago. My family and I moved to Northern California. We go to a little church, and guess who comes to town as the guest speaker?
It's
Dave Reaver. And I told my pastor that I said, I got to meet this guy. I didn't even know he was still alive. I never thought of him after that. And I just want to tell him how God used him as a pivotal, you know, point, crossroads in my life way back in the late 70s. And so I was able to visit with Dave and tell him that. And I also, I don't know how much of the story you want me to tell, January.
Well, you know, that is a very, very powerful, sweet story about what goes around comes around. And people sometimes, they don't realize that everything you put out there in the universe is out there. And so often it'll come right back at you and as in your case, take you forward. Thank you for sharing that. I know it's difficult to talk about sometimes. Let's let's talk a little bit about chemo brain and what happens after you go through that. Did you find humor in chemo brain?
You know, I did, and I don't claim chemo brain because, you know, I speak positive words. You know, I can say it's not chemo brain. I'm just getting old. You know, that's more acceptable to me than claiming chemo brain. But you know, that's generally known as you know, cancer patients that experience a diminished memory, unable to focus on things. And so, so a little bit of chemo brain. You know, that at that time I got a new cell phone. And I just kept transposing the numbers. I couldn't remember the numbers. And so I made a little phrase, made up a little phrase to remind me. And the numbers were, I don't know, there's something like, you know, the numbers were, you know, 55038 were the last digits. And so the phrase was, I used to be 50 years old, and I've never had a 38-inch bust. And that helps me to remember the phone number. Until my friend Carol reminded me, yeah, but we also used to be 38 years old, and we've never had a 50-inch bust. So thank you, Aunt Carol. Now I got to come up with a different phrase to remember my phone number.
Well, you've inspired me, because before we went on the air, I have to share with the listeners, we were going over the phone calls, and I had transposed some numbers. So I think it's, and I have not had chemo, so I definitely am dealing with the old age thing.
Well, you have no excuse then.
And now tell us a little bit about your organization, Been There, Got the Wig, and that's got to be a group of people who have walked the walk and talked the talk, right?
You know, absolutely. That, you know, the great success out of the hardship that I went through and my family experienced through this is, you know, reaching out and helping other people. And that's one of the things that one of the tips to fight fear is to reach out and help other people, other women who are going through similar circumstance, because it takes the focus off of our fear. But more importantly, there's hope in knowing that you're not alone. And so what came out of this was it's called the Been There, Got the Wig, which is my trademark phrase, Been There, Got the Wig Breakfast Club and Ministry. And it's a group of women, I call us chemo buddies, but they don't have to have experienced chemo as part of their treatment. But it's chemo buddies who meet for camaraderie, conversation, and comfort food. And we meet in a local restaurant. There is no set meeting or time. It's just, you know, per woman by woman, when they want to meet. Because, you know, cancer patients have good days and bad days, and sometimes they don't feel like eating or whatever. So sometimes I might go there two or three times a week, but each time with different women. Mm-hmm. And it is very small and intimate. It's unlike other large support groups. And, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. I didn't care for that. I felt it was impersonal, kind of like what I imagine an AA meeting is. Hello, I'm Jana Flagg. I had ovarian cancer, and then sit down. You know, well, you can't help each other when that's all you get, you know. And I went to a support group, and, you know, bless their hearts. Their hearts are in the right place. But they even had a couple men in this ovarian cancer support group. And I thought, wait a minute. And they said, well, we like him. You know, he had lymphoma or something. We like him. Yeah, but then I can't talk about my body and, you know,
the woman
different
thing.
Things that we go through. Yeah. Anyway, but we, you know, we have a good time. It's upbeat. We're positive. We're upbeat. It's faith-based. Everybody buys their own pancake or cup of tea. And, you know, it's a safe place to laugh. That, you know, friends and family are good to a point.
Yeah.
But they need normal. So we cancer patients need people who can empathize with us. And when I woke up in that hospital, I felt that the Lord told me, you will have a Been There ministry. That's before I knew I had cancer. He just said, you know, you will have a Been There ministry. And so it's my goal to just love women one at a time through this process. And whether it's going to the wig place like you did with your girlfriend, and we laugh and we pick out wigs and whatever it is, driving them to treatment and being there with them, or being in with the doctor and taking notes when the doctor's talking to them, whatever we can do, because I didn't have that. I mean, I have a fabulous, supportive husband, but he had to go to work. And also,
sure.
You know, like I said, you know, after a while, your family wants normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my boy
desperate.
Was in the seventh grade, and he said, mm-hmm. he said, "You mean for my entire seventh grade, you're not going to cook or drive me or go to my game or do anything?" Well,
wow.
Yeah, I was a full-time
yeah.
patient.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from my sponsor. And when we come back with Jana Flagg, we're going to talk a little bit more about the gift of cancer. And I know that sounds strange, but I do find that when I look back on my experience with my best friend and her cancer, it truly was a gift at the time. But it took us a long time to realize that. We'll be right back with Jana Flagg.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage? Any marriage. Read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, "Our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage." Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
Pat's book's fantastic, and if you are thinking about a second marriage, I highly recommend Second Marriage, and I highly recommend Pat's book. We're back with my guest, Jana Flagg, and we're talking about the gift of cancer, which sounds like a strange way to express it. But first, Jana, share with us, what did your doctor say? I bet you surprised them, didn't you?
Well, you know, I'm sure that they are surprised. As I mentioned earlier, that my husband and I asked the tough questions. We wanted to know what we were dealing with, and we said, "Will these surgeries and chemo and all this treatment, will it cure me or just buy me time?" And they told me straight out, "It'll just buy you time." But they did add. But it's the feisty ones that make it, and you are not a typical patient. And since that time, I'm practically a spokesperson for the gynecological oncology department.
I'm sure.
In a large hospital. So, I hope that gives them, you know, hope to pass on to other patients.
Mm-hmm. Well, finding the funny definitely does help you fight fear, and it does help you foster faith. When you look back on this experience that God has given you, share with us if you have any regrets, advice, and what your success means to you today as we're speaking.
Well, I don't have regrets, and even before cancer, you know, the glass is half full to me. I'm a positive person, so I don't live with regrets. Except I wish I'd have gone to the dentist sooner when I was in my 20s. But that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother thing. I like these crowns. They look good, you know. But you know what success means to me, January, is defeating fear. Is not letting fear knock me down and not staying down for the count. You know, not letting fear discourage me or diminish my faith or rob me of hope, you know, as I go through tough times in life, as we all go through tough times. And the advice that I would give is for people to follow the tips that we've talked about to knock out fear, to, you know, to hang out with positive people and ignore the negative comments and add humor to their life and focus on the positive, and to reach out and to help other people that are going through the same thing, because there's hope in knowing that you're not alone. And then I believe that they would succeed. And so I'd say put on your boxing gloves and jump in the ring and fight fear.
Yeah, okay. And you did that with your book. Your book is an amazing journey of a fight with a fight against fear that fostered faith. It puts you out of your comfort zone and forced you to embrace life with a gusto that you've really done. Could you briefly share an example of finding humor during your hardship times?
I thought it was funny then, and I think it's even funnier to me now. But, you know, I found that people responded differently to me once they found out I had cancer, once the word got around church. You know, I noticed that people, you know, they were acting kind of different around me. And one lady came up to me, and she apologized. She said, "I'm sorry I didn't get to know you." And I thought, I'm still here. I'm feeling for my flesh, you know. I'm thinking, hey, I'm still here. And she turned and she walked away. So she just missed her second chance.
There you go.
Yeah. And another person came up to me and said, "I'm so glad I'm not you."
Okay.
And now I think they were trying to make me feel better. You know, it's awkward. Yeah. People don't know what to say. Yeah. I think they meant well, so I didn't get offended, you know, but I thought, you know, maybe there's a cancer card to play here. And so I tried it out when I went to a camera store to return an expensive cable. The manager said I wouldn't get a refund, and as he turned to walk away, I shouted out, "I'm a cancer survivor!" And I lifted my shirt to show him that huge, ugly scar across my tummy. And boy, with his eyes wide open, he gave me my $40 refund, and I was pretty happy about that. I thought, boy, this cancer survivor thing isn't bad. I could work this.
Well,
and,
you know, you're,
you're
the first one I've ever heard talk about using the cancer card. I love it.
Well, I just might be the first one to admit it. That's all.
Yeah. Okay.
So I got home, and I stood in front of a mirror to see, you know, and lifted my shirt to see what he saw that was so persuasive, you know. When I did that, I was shocked to see that I had inadvertently lifted my shirt too high, and I flashed him. Yeah. Well, I can never go back to that store again.
Well, he probably gave you the refund just to get you out of the store.
Well, that's the heck of it. Now I'm not sure why I got the refund. But you know what? January, this could revolutionize shopping as we know it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
forget,
I think a lot of women are thinking about showing their stretch marks, you know. So I think it could revolutionize the world. You know, you are a priceless personality, and I want to thank you so much for sending me your email and having the fates conspire to get us together tonight. I hope that you will come back many more times in the future and share your courageous story with my listeners.
Thank you so much.
It's been wonderful. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this show with Jana today. She's quite an amazing gal, and she truly is another priceless personality in my life. You know, my upcoming guests for the rest of the week are like Jana. They're all exciting, eclectic, energizing. They will amaze, amuse, emphasis on amuse, and astonish you. This is a show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful too and deal with life and fight fear. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope we can encourage all of our listeners to emulate our guests today and every day. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Remember, you heard it here from January Jones. Chocolate is the new broccoli. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Jana Flagg. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.